You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Guys, this is The Brian Callen Show. The Brian the Kid Callen, and I'm with my cohort, Hunter Motz. And some people call it The Brian Callen / Hunter Motz Show. I don't approve of that, but I understand it. Our guest, our esteemed guest is Dan O'Brien, who is... He works for crack.com, and if you haven't gone to crack.com, then you're remiss, because it's just nothing but fun. Head writer, creative director of video for crack.com, which means he's got his own private helicopter, and he's chauffeured everywhere. He's brought here. He has an entourage. It's crazy.
He actually didn't even have to walk in the building. Like, he just stepped on the backs of servants.
That's exactly right. Congratulations on all your
Thank
success,
you.
Dan.
I was surprised I was the only one doing that.
It's weird. God, he's such an aristocrat. He's wearing a cravat.
And he's from Jersey. Yeah.
And riding boots.
Yeah, I saw you guys walking around on your own legs, and I thought, oh, quaint.
It's rather quaint. It's rather American, if you will. So pedestrian. Well, that's our podcast. Thanks, guys. Dan, you wrote, and I don't think it's out yet.
No.
We have the very sort of the copy nobody else has. I read this book in a sitting, How to Fight Presidents. And I just want to say, defending yourself against the badasses who ran this country. Look, basically, it's an expose on who the toughest president was. I have my point of view. Hunter probably has his point of view. And Dan has his point of view. I'm looking forward to getting into this. Because in some ways, this topic and this book, this might be the greatest book ever written. And I don't know if another book needs to be written. So that's what I have to say about that. Because there's nothing more important than who's the batter. Ass. I mean, this is what men talk about. This is what boys talk
Absolutely.
About all day long. I mean, my friends and I get into heated discussions about who would have wanted to fight Andre Agassi or Allen Iverson. I mean, it's crazy. And obviously, Allen Iverson would have kicked his fucking ass. But it just goes on and on. So, I mean, my buddy played football, and I said Roger Clemens could kick his ass because my buddy's as big as Roger Clemens. And my buddy was like, he played baseball. I was a football player. If you ever say that to me again, I'm going to punch you in the face. Give me the toughest president that ever lived.
My toughest president that ever lived is, hands down, Theodore Roosevelt.
All 5'4 of them.
Sorry?
How tall was he, about? 5'4?
5'4, yeah. That didn't really stop him. I think Wolverine was about 5'4.
Well, actually, I have it on good authority. Wolverine is 6'4. I've met Hugh Grant. Keep going.
Hugh Jackman. Hugh Grant is definitely
no,
not.
No, I meant Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant played the British version of Wolverine.
Yeah.
I have to deal with this bullshit accuracy constantly.
Hugh Grant will pour the shit out of some tea, man.
we'll see what he has. I'm sorry. I was doing this accent, so I thought of Hugh Grant. So please continue. I interrupted. Teddy Roosevelt.
Sure. It's neat because everyone who sees pictures of Teddy Roosevelt, they've got this idea of the bull moose, this big, broad, stocky. You know, you've seen pictures of him. He's got boxing gloves on. You know, he does jiu-jitsu and taekwondo. He's got this fighting experience. He started as an incredibly sickly child. He had asthma. He was blind in one eye. His parents were constantly looming over his bed and treating it like a deathbed because he was just a pile of sick all the time. And his dad, I think, to toughen him up whenever his asthma was acting up, his dad, on whatever authority early 1900s New York aristocrats had, would blow cigar smoke at him, like, this is going to help toughen
wow.
you up. Which apparently it did.
Which apparently it did.
I'm saying now on this podcast, in my capacity as a role model, that's a good idea for children with asthma, apparently.
You heard it first on the Brian Callen Hunter Motz Show.
But only if they're Cuban.
That's right. Go on.
There was, I think, on one of Teddy's birthdays, his father was like, look, you have a great mind, and you need to strengthen your mind because your body is not going to make you a great man. Your body is sickly and poorly, so you got to rely on your mind. And Teddy, at like 13 or 14 years old, says, I'll make my body.
Wow.
And then he did.
And then
he grew up to be this fighter. You know, he had the rough riders in the war and would
march
barefoot.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he went to a war. He was in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a flair for the theatrical.
Sure.
But But he did go to the war, and he hunted, and he, you know, he was an outdoorsman, and I think he's responsible for creating Yosemite and for Yellowstone.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. He was such a lover of nature, which doesn't make him badass, but just makes him neat and cool.
Yeah,
and I like him for that.
He read a book a day, I believe, in the White House.
Yeah, absolutely. He was so
it's no joke.
Yeah, we don't really get presidents that are this good mix of intellectual and thinker and fighter and yeah. and tough man's man anymore.
I know that, and the last presidents we've had have owned fluffy dogs.
Right,
I'm not, and they jogged for exercise.
Yeah.
Not guys I hang out with.
Yeah,
I wish we had a president that first of all made his own money. Mm-hmm. That had worked in the real world and that owned like a Rottweiler, Pitbull, just something, and who's punched somebody in the face once in their life.
Yeah.
Barack is maybe good at debating. Not really. And George Bush was a cheerleader. He was a cheerleader.
So was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, by the way.
Was
so there's
he?
Yeah. Listen, some of our
but
finest
presidents. He had polio,
presidents.
So that's a feat in itself. He couldn't even walk. That's impressive. You know, the thing that I mean, being quote-unquote tough, fighting, all the macho stuff, you know, that's considered gauche nowadays.
Yeah.
That's considered like, you know, well, God, that's so inappropriate. I still box. I still get in a ring. I'm not good, but it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like I can sweat and be a man. You do CrossFit, Hunter,
yeah,
when
I
you're
do.
Not thinking.
But no, but I mean, and you know, that's Teddy Roosevelt's famous speech about the man in the ring. You know what I mean? Like, and actually, have you ever read Teddy Roosevelt's Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech?
No.
It's amazing because he spends...
Recite it verbatim. Him right now, please.
Dan, for God's sake.
But it's amazing because he spends the whole time that he's receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, he's talking about how awesome war is.
Yeah. Well, he was quoted as saying that, you know, we need a good war. It'll get the country, you know, back on its feet.
Yeah.
Men, it'll make men of men. We're getting soft and all that stuff.
And that was another neat thing about him, though, is that he loved war so much. He loved fighting in wars, and he loved what it did for America. But when he was president, he didn't pressure us into any kind of war. He looked around, saw there was no just cause for war. So even though he selfishly loved it, he was just realized, well, this is not good for the country right now, so I won't do it. I'm going to put my favorite thing on the back burner.
Yeah,
I guess I'll
thing.
Build some parks or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, war, you know, I know from talking to real, you know, soldiers who've been up close and personal with it, you go in with one idea of what war is, and you leave with a very, very different idea.
Right.
So the idea that glory, all you have to do is see people getting on trains in World War I and waving to their loved ones, and then look at the pictures of them coming back.
Right.
It ain't pretty in any way. So, and it's always interesting to see, like, real warriors who've been through it as they get older. That a lot of times they are reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
People that, the one guy who was reluctant to go to Iraq, who knew what the nitty-gritty was going to be, was Powell.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Powell and all the other guys who are, you know, Douglas Feith and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and George Bush and Dick Cheney, and none of them had done a day in uniform, including Bush. Don't talk to me about the National Guard. Okay, so I don't think so.
All right.
I mean, Teddy died of heart disease. He's a little guy.
What a coward.
I just feel like he. I just mean I'm thinking in a ring, you put these two guys in it. I'm talking about just no holds barred fighting. I think, and there are different kinds of fighting, but in no holds barred fighting, Teddy's heart gives out. He doesn't have the cardio. He can't go into the second, third round. The guy I'm going to choose, the toughest president I'm going to choose, and again, Abraham Lincoln was famed for his physical strength. He's also 6'4". Rangy. So if you get tied up with that guy, or if he jabs you in your nose, or grabs you by your throat with those big axe wielding hands, you're in a world of trouble. All right?
Yeah.
That's a lot to manage.
Because he's not just a big guy. He's like superhumanly big guy. He's got the Marfan syndrome, I think it was called, which makes your limbs grow longer than their supposed to be.
That's right.
Like an orangutan.
Yeah, like these, yeah, ridiculous freak arms that he strengthened by chopping wood all the time. And there are rumors that he could be seen around his town of New Salem just carrying 1,000 to 1,200 pound blocks of wood. I don't know what
that's
he was
a lie.
Doing.
That's definitely a lie, because the world record is, I mean, but I'm sure
it's in the book. So.
I did read it.
It has to be true.
I know, and I did read it, and I appreciate it. So, and I know this has been sourced exhaustively, so I stand corrected.
Dan actually built a time machine just to verify each fact.
it's in the book.
1,200 pounds, check. It was actually 1,163.
You're right,
you know.
You're right. No, but Teddy, at the same time, could go for a double leg, take him down, and now, and if he knows jiu-jitsu, Teddy could climb him, just gently nudge up, and then put him in an armbar. I can see an opening. I can see where Teddy might get, you know, the advantage if he knows how to fight. He goes low. Now he wrestled, jiu-jitsu, did some boxing. He understood angles.
Yeah.
You put an axe in Lincoln's hand, everybody dies, including vampires.
Right? That's also true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all verified.
Yeah.
Andrew Jackson.
Well, hold on. First, before I do, just in Teddy's defense, I think the story about when he was giving the speech and got shot really speaks to why Teddy might be the toughest president, if you want to tell us that, Dan.
He was. He was on his way to give a campaign speech, and there was an assassination attempt, and it got him, like, right through his speech that was in his pocket, and it still hit him. It pierced him, and there was blood coming down. And he went out there he still went out and got on his podium, and he was like, I'm going to paraphrase. He's like, what's up, everybody? Just real quick, there's a bullet in me right now. I'm going to still give my speech, but I just want you all to know that I'm bleeding right now. You could probably still catch the guy. He's running away. America.
Yeah. And also, I remember the quote is he was like, so I'm going to have to cut my speech a little short.
Yeah.
And then he spoke for
2 hours, something? What was it? Something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Some absurd amount of time.
Although your account of Reagan and him taking a shot to the chest and losing 3 pints of blood, which is significant, and then telling the doctors, joking around, telling the doctors, hope you're a Republican.
Yeah.
and that is as badass as it gets. Yeah. And then back to work 12 days later.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And he's making jokes with the nurses and, like, hitting on the nurses when he was in recovery immediately. It's like, that's a guy I like as a president.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
Even, like, stripping away anything he's done politically, it's like, even if he hadn't done anything yet, it's still like, what a cool guy. I'm fine with you being the face of our country.
As am I. And as you also said, the bullet ricocheted off his rib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any more questions, America? if you don't like Ronald Reagan, maybe you should go to the European Union.
Well, and also Ronald Reagan was, as a lifeguard, saved something like dozens of people's lives or something like that.
That's a lie too, but it is in the book. It is in the book. So, but again, Dan, I know you've researched this.
But anyway, so yeah, Andrew Jackson, you were saying.
Well, he's still not my toughest. I got my toughest in my back pocket.
Oh, it's not even Lincoln.
It's not even Lincoln.
You're going to say Millard Fillmore, and I'm going to walk out of this podcast.
First of all, until I read the book, didn't know Millard Fillmore was even a president.
Yeah.
It was kind of a crazy thing. Like, who the hell is Millard Fillmore? That's the greatest and most difficult trivia question. What was he president for, like, a minute? When?
He was the 14th president. He served his full term, I believe. Is that right?
13th.
Oh, yeah. The 14th was Pierce, right? Yeah. Who was the pretty boy. And then 13th. There was a series of useless presidents before the Civil War, which is kind of why the Civil War happened. Buchanan was, like, really bad.
Yeah. Right. And in the research of this book, there was even being able to look at someone who was so disastrously shitty as a president could make for a good chapter. Like, Warren G. Harding's presidency was so full of scandal and missteps. I was like, well, at least this will be entertaining. Even, like, the shittier guys I could make something out of. Mm-hmm. Millard Fillmore, nothing. There's absolutely nothing I could do about him.
Zero. Just the milquetoast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, back then, you got to go with back in the day with guys like Andrew Jackson. Life was so physical.
Yeah.
You came up on a farm. You came up doing things like shearing sheep and splitting wood and building your own house. Their hands, their bodies. You were drinking raw milk and meat, and you know you were living on grains.
Is drinking raw milk a sign of toughness? I drink
milk
unpasteurized.
Well, what he said was you're drinking raw milk and meat. So I think it's those two. Like
when you're drinking meat,
you dip meat into the milk.
Exactly. Thank you, Dan, for understanding how they ate back in the old days and how I eat in my home.
Look, I did a whole lot of research. I know how it went down.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to dip my meat in this milk.
This raw milk.
Yeah, I like to kill an animal and then dip its flesh in its own milk. Yeah.
Are you saying you're not keeping kosher, Brian?
Fuck you. Now, so who do you think I'm going to say?
It's not Andrew Jackson, you're saying.
Well, Andrew Jackson is a killer of men.
He is.
Andrew Jackson is a fierce, and I believe by all accounts, a fairly large man, took a bullet in a duel and kept it in his chest and used to have terrible fits of coughing and things like that. But he was a badass.
He was a badass.
Not an aristocrat. He was a soldier, a warrior.
This was a duel where he gave his opponent the first shot. Which is not, I don't know, you said you box. I'm not sure if you duel at all.
You know what, I'm not going to go into that right now. It all depends. It depends on how angry I am, but keep going.
I dueled in undergrad, and I can say...
he was on the varsity duel team.
Right, offering someone the first shot, terrible strategy. But it worked for Jackson. He got shot, and he was like, you didn't shoot me good enough because I'm alive. And then he shot him, and he won that duel, and went on to, we don't know, historians are... up in the air about how many duels Andrew Jackson has participated in, but we know that it's enough that there's a question, which is scary.
God,
to me.
Wow.
I mean, exactly. Talk about a fight. There's guys who'll fight you, and then there's guys that'll, let's do it with guns.
Yeah.
That's a whole different level, man. That's a whole, And every picture of him, he's just so, he's so fierce looking.
Yeah. So angry all the time.
Oh. Yeah. Well, they said in his inauguration, all his fellow soldiers and friends came in with their dirty boots and they were dancing on the table in the White House and it was just not done. It was an aristocratic
setting.
Well,
this crazy, crazy ass party that was so intense that he snuck out of a window and left because he was like, I need to go somewhere and go be president. This party's going on too long.
God.
I can't handle it anymore. He just snuck out the window and people were like, that's fine, we'll close up here.
Yeah, they trashed the Oval Office or something. I mean,
well, he was the first log cabin president.
Yeah,
you
the first
know?
People's
yeah.
president.
Yeah. I mean, the first six presidents had all been aristocrats, either from Virginia or Massachusetts. And then here comes this guy who was born in Tennessee, I think.
There are two different states that are actually claiming Jackson's
birthplace. Yeah.
Yeah. He clearly blow dried his hair.
Brazilian.
He just rode. He'd get on his horse and gallop to dry it.
Yeah.
A whole different level of man, you know?
Yeah. So who's your pick?
But there's one man I have to go with because of his sheer athleticism and size, and that's Mr. Gerald Ford.
Ford.
Well, first of all, he could have played in the NFL.
Yeah.
Let's just stop for a second. He, if you look at him, and I've actually seen him in person when I was in college, he's a giant man. I'm going to give him, I'm saying he's an easy and natural 235, 240 maybe. I mean, I don't know how big. Just huge Germanic bones or Irish bones, whatever. And a head on him, you better punch him hard. And a ridiculous athlete, ridiculous strategic. So you're talking about a guy who made it to the highest level in football. They are the biggest, fastest, strongest men in the world. I don't see that athleticism. I see grit and toughness in these guys. Mm-hmm. Don't see that athleticism in these other presidents. I got to go with Gerald Ford.
Well, Brian, I respect that. But as someone who has played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, I happen to know that sheer size is not all it takes to be great in the ring.
This is true.
You know, and
you
I think that's
a fight.
Yeah, and that's the point is I think, you know, if you look at someone like George Washington or Teddy Roosevelt or... You know,
Washington was a big boy.
Yeah, he was huge. And that's the thing. And he already had no teeth, so you could just punch him there as much as you wanted. It wouldn't matter.
You got a point. You got a point. But the pictures of Ford, I Googled young Ford.
He's a tough, handsome guy.
Handsome kid.
Well, also, as we're saying this, like, when are they fighting during their presidencies or are we fighting them in their prime?
I would say take each president in their prime, and that's the only way it's a fair fight to me.
100%. Teddy is just, Teddy was more bluster. He just wasn't as tough. I'm sorry, Dan.
He got shot and then spoke for...
Got nicked.
He had soldiers. soldiers were complaining that they're like, oh, you're making us ride too far. No one can ride that far. And then as president, he got on a horse and rode 100 miles and was like, I just did it, and dropped whatever they had instead of mics at the time to prove his point.
Just dropped this long horn, this long bone, a long bone voice amplifier. That's just dropped it. I do that sometimes after I come off stage as a comic, and it doesn't have any effect at all. I drop the mic like it's hot, and I walk away. It doesn't really do much,
except piss off the sound engineer.
Yeah exactly. And by the way, though, Teddy, yeah, I know he rode horses for a long period of time, Dan, but Jared Ford could have played for the Bears and for the Bills and for anybody in the NFL.
But a lot of these people are coming from a time before football.
Whatever.
You don't think that Abraham Lincoln or George Washington could have been professional football players? Like,
no,
or Andrew
I don't.
Jackson? You don't think Andrew don't Jackson know. Was tough enough to play American football?
I don't know what their 40 was. Don't know what they benched. Don't know what they were about. So it's a tough thing. It's a difference in grit. It'll get you only so far. When you're that good an athlete, man, you can put it down on somebody. You can put it down on a guy, especially a guy who's 5'4". See, Ford's not hearing a peep out of anybody who's 5'4 with stubby fingers. It's not going to happen. He just can't get a grip of him.
You're completely taking out, like, drive and passion, and it's not about, like... Well, fights to me come down to who probably wants this more, like who's desperate enough to, when it gets down to it, like bite you on the cheek and play like a maniac. I give that more, like Ford doesn't strike me as the type who will.
Yeah, you know, there is something to be said. Andrew Jackson might be the guy because he plays for keeps immediately.
Yeah.
And he's not in there. Here's the difference. Those guys are fighters. Jackson was a killer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to kill you. So there is that. And when you see that in another man's eyes, I don't know. And Ford was a little too jolly, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Although, if you look at young pictures of him, he looked very hard. He looked very hard.
He did, and he was, I think in some time in his college career, the college asked him to teach boxing, junior varsity or varsity boxing, even though he had no experience with it. They were just like, you're a really, really tough guy. You probably know how to beat the crap out of people. And he's like, well, give it a shot. And he did. And he was like their boxing coach.
Well, now, hold on. Now, and I forgot about that, and I'm glad you reminded me of that. Because Mr. Ford, now take a look at his body there. Take a look at this kid. Look at the jawline on this guy. And then look at Jackson. And by all accounts, Jackson was a tall, thin man, probably about 185, probably about 6'1" or 6'2", whatever he was. If you add his hair, he's taller. You're talking about a very different athlete. I mean, I think Ford was, what was he? Was he center? What position did he play? Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah.
But he played in a very rough game with a steel-cut jaw. I just don't see. And strategic. He knew the game. This is a very, very smart guy. Jackson, you put a weapon in Jackson's hand. If there are weapons involved, I think Jackson or Lincoln win. Anybody from the old days is going to win. And the reason I say that is because they used to using farm tools.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, there was just so much more violence then. I mean, you know, raw practice and exposure to violence when you're growing up in the backwoods.
Yeah, and Teddy was a bit of an aristocrat, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, he's got this Rough Rider
theatrical thing
then. that has followed him, but he's...
It's called propaganda.
Sure. He was also a cowboy for a number of years.
Yeah, but so was Jack Twist.
I don't know who Jack Twist is, but that's really funny.
Brokeback Mountain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just because you're gay doesn't mean you're not tough, believe me.
Yeah, but listen, Jake Gyllenhaal, do you think Jake Gyllenhaal's tough?
I would say Heath Ledger's tough. I would fuck the shit out of Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. I'm a straight man. He's a good-looking guy.
I don't want to...
You heard it first on the Brian Callen
show. Yeah, this is a classy show.
I don't want to spoil my next book. I can't turn this... My next book is How to Fight Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh, okay. And I don't want to give away all of my stuff right now.
Understandable. To answer your question, Brian, Ford played center and linebacker.
Okay, and linebacker. Dan, you got to give it up. You got to change your mind on this podcast.
Man, no.
Dan, you point to the fact that he rode a horse for a long time and he's a cowboy. I'm talking about a middle linebacker in the NFL.
Then I'll concede that you can have Teddy. Then I'll switch to Jackson or Lincoln or Washington, who preferred the sounds of bullets whizzing by his head over silence.
That is a you have me in a twist right now, and not in a Jack twist or whatever that guy's name. You got me in a twist because shit, Lincoln and Ford would be a really interesting fight.
Yeah.
Because Lincoln is, I mean, when you got to fight a tall, thin, hard man like that.
Just wiry.
Yeah, I mean, just reach alone. Like, Ford isn't getting anywhere near Lincoln.
Lincoln's had fights. Lincoln came to a new town and saw there was like a gang that was running it. And within like 2 days of being there, he just decided he didn't want to be under anyone's thumb. So he just challenged the biggest and toughest of them. I was like, who's the toughest guy? I bet you $5. Some money with my face on it eventually that I could find someone tougher than you. And they took that bet. No one stood up to be tougher than the toughest guy. And Lincoln was just like, all right, screw it. I'll do it then. And he fought this entire gang, just started with their leader and, according to reports, lifted him up in the air and shook him. And these are two, like, 19-year-olds or 20-somethings. They're not like a 20-year-old picking up a baby.
Yeah.
You probably didn't think that's what the fight was, but it wasn't that anyway. He just picked him up and shook him and threw him, and then the rest of the Grove boys, this gang, came and triple and quadruple teamed him, and he fought them off too, just like laughing and smiling, juggling them up in the air.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford couldn't stand up straight. Like, he had a tendency to fall down, Brian. So
he was a little clumsy, wasn't he?
He was a lot clumsy.
Middle linebacker, though, and center.
Yeah, but middle
and
linebacker.
And we know that. A lot of the other stuff is legend. I mean, Lincoln, a lot of that stuff is legend, isn't it? It's like, a lot of it's like, well, he was doing this, and you know how people play. It's a game of telephone. They play it. They lie. And you're a liar, Dan.
And, so, and your book is the greatest book ever written, but it's full of lies.
It is the greatest book ever written. I actually don't believe. I think I'm going to end my. I'm never going to do another podcast after this. Because it's already been written and there's no point.
You've been to the top of Everest and you've seen the promised land and
that is correct.
What else is there?
But so Teddy is the most impressive president to you according to the things he did?
According to the things he did and who he was and like what he represent, what I think a leader should be as far as this nice balance of strength and intelligence and intellectualism and nature preservation. He was someone who truly loved every aspect of America and was just the kind of guy that you look at and you're like, yeah, I feel safe letting you run things for
a lot of historians agree with you on all that. He was a tough-looking little dude, but he was a little guy. He's a little guy. I just as a former wrestler, whenever you wrestle little dudes,
he was 5'10", Brian. Yeah. I don't know where you're getting
was
this.
Was he 5'10"?
Like, yeah, where are you getting this 5'4" thing from?
He doesn't look like a big. He doesn't look like a tall guy.
Well, you know, 5'10" is legit, especially if he's thick.
Yeah.
So now I'm gonna have to change a lot. Hold on. Washington 6'3", Lincoln 6'4". That's significant.
FDR 6'2" when not in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
James Madison 3.5 feet tall.
He was tiny. I couldn't believe that. You said he was like 100 pounds or something?
He was 100 pounds and like 5'4".
Wow, that's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. He's like our third president, right?
Yeah.
I mean, second president.
Fourth president.
I love the internet. I just typed in presidents by height, and it auto-completes with and BMI, so you can actually see how tall and how fat
I need
they were.
I need it. This is important.
Yeah, look at this.
And Dan, who was the happiest president? And who was the most miserable?
The happiest president. Most miserable president was Lincoln. Definitely... Well, I mean, Lincoln had depression.
And he lost his kids.
Yeah.
So sad.
Taft was probably the guy who hated the job more than anyone else.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taft was miserable, and Coolidge
was
miserable.
That's why he got so fat.
Yeah. He he made a promise as president. He was like, I'm sorry, I'm fat. I'm going to lose 30 pounds. And I think he gained 90.
Yeah.
And then lose the weight until he left office. And he was just, he slept all day because he hated it. And he would like sleep through meetings with foreign dignitaries.
Oh, no.
And was just so happy to leave that job and had like the most enriching and fulfilling post-presidential career.
Did he really?
Just like writing his books and going fishing and enjoying
becoming
his life.
Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and,
you know.
And just like sitting around at home and like, man, can you guys believe it? I used to be president. What a weird.
Wow. Yeah. Who loved being president besides Teddy?
Lincoln loved being president for the power. He always wanted that power. Arthur really craved the power too. Arthur was a guy who really liked
Arthur,
the
idea.
Chester A. Arthur.
Arthur.
Really liked the idea of being seen as a powerful and important person. And so,
who do you think was the most effective president? Who left the greatest legacy? And it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's so tough because
you got George Washington, who saved the Republic in some ways by stopping his army from marching on Congress to get their money,
right? And sort of creating this idea of American exceptionalism that set the tone for us as and
refusing the kingship,
yeah, and him being however much of it we want to decide is true, the legend is more important than that. Him being the reluctant farmer turned soldier, reluctant soldier turned president is a really neat story for. Kids
very
for generations and generations.
Very just, much yeah. so. And you're right. I mean, in a way, he embodied what you know, in almost every case when there's a civil war fought, I'm sorry, a civil war, when there's a revolutionary war fought, the country then breaks into civil war because, you know, the two sides, there's a power vacuum. And this didn't happen in this case. And a lot of it was his leadership.
Right. There was really only... there was only Washington who could be Washington. You look around at everybody else who's there. They were smarter men and they were better commanders, but none of them had that strange cocktail of
sobriety.
Everything that Washington had that made him the guy that you just trusted implicitly and let him.
Well, he was a man of great noble character.
Absolutely.
He was theatrical, yet he was very sober, a very sober thinker, a very kind of the guy with the wooden teeth, man, who when the shit hit the fan.
Yeah, the wooden teeth thing also is a great story, but probably not true. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. But there are so many great Washington stories. One of the ones that I love is, you know, when the army is about to, like, go and wreck shit because they haven't been paid, he, like, pulls out his speech, right? And, like, struggles to read it and then, like, gets out his eyeglasses.
Forgive me, gentlemen. And, I've gone blind in defense of my country.
And at that point, the whole room crumbles. And, like, how after that
nobody suffered
go,
more for his country than
that guy. And then and at that point, you know, how do you start bitching about your pay?
Yeah.
I do that. I do that a lot, too, when my wife is mad at me. I struggle for it. I can't see. I'm blind. I'm blind. What about Bill Clinton in a fight? He was actually a womanizer and had ferocious appetites, slept 4 hours a night. He's actually probably tougher than we're giving him credit for.
Yeah, sure, probably tougher than we give him credit for. But
he wasn't.
Come on, Andrew Jackson tough?
Yeah,
or,
that's
you know,
right. You're right.
You know, also, I would say, though, by the way, LBJ, I think that, like, you make an amazing case for LBJ.
Yes,
what
you
an
do.
Interesting guy.
Yeah.
What a fun chapter.
Yeah. And he was such a. I've listened to the LBJ tapes.
Yeah.
He was so charming. He would get people not to print stories, you know, and he just wore that Vietnam War on his sleeve. I mean, he just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite LBJ quotes is when, because, you know, LBJ really had, like, his great goal for his presidency was to build this great society, his war on poverty and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And the Civil Rights Act, you know.
Yeah, and he got sidetracked by the Vietnam War. And he later said of the Vietnam War, that bitch cost me my great society.
Yeah.
Wow.
Such a great... You mentioned listening to the tapes and how, like, charming he is, and that's it's so interesting that he, so much of what he did was an act.
Yeah.
Like, he was really whomever he needed to be, depending on the situation. And he would do. You got these phone calls with him on the phone with his tailor, where he's like, "I want you to make me some nice pants down where between my crotch and my butthole," which is like exact quotes of what he says on these tapes describing his pants. And then meanwhile, he can off the cuff pull out a very grand and eloquent and, like, poignant.
Yeah,
speech.
He was incredible with language. Actually,
yeah. Tell us about Jumbo.
But you want to hear about his dick? But I was
well, no,
ask
but him. I was actually this. Yes, I mean LBJ was famous for having a huge, huge Johnson. But it's more what he did with that Johnson that I think is interesting.
To wave it at people.
He would waggle it at senators. He peed on a Secret Service member once, like at a.
It's my prerogative. My prerogative.
Don't worry, son. It's my prerogative, and like the Secret Service wasn't. Worried about his prerogative. Like, that's fine. I'm still covered in pee, Mr. Preston.
What would you think he was a? I mean, when a guy is, I just saw Bryan Cranston in the play called God, All the Way, I think, or something like that. Anyway, it's about LBJ.
Yeah.
And he plays LBJ, does an amazing job, an amazing job. But do you think that he was overall a good man, or was he a sociopath who was just willing to do what it took to get into power? I mean,
it is tough because there's accounts of him, like his reason for wanting to be vice president was that he knew that he wanted to be president, didn't have a chance to be elected president coming from South, Texas, being where he was, knew he wasn't going to be elected president because he didn't have the right
people. Yeah.
And he looked and he was like, well, X amount of presidents were assassinated and X amount of vice presidents ascended, so that is literally my best chance of being president is becoming vice president and then my president getting assassinated. That's the only shot that I'm going to have.
Wow.
And then it happened. I don't think those two things are related.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let that idea hang for a while.
I like that. We should have had a pause there where...
Yeah. That's good.
There it is.
Just in case there are any JFK conspiracy theorists out there that are like losing steam.
There are no conspiracy theorists out there. I love those guys. It does make the case for it's an interesting thing.
And he's tied first equal with Abe Lincoln for height.
Wow, 6'4".
He was 6'4"?
Yeah.
That's a big boy.
I shouldn't be surprised by that, the guy who wrote the president's book.
Yeah.
6'4"? Really?
That's one of the facts in chapter blah, 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 blah.
That's a big boy, man.
Yeah.
6'4", that's a big
and
man.
Look, he's burly, too. He's a burly Texan.
And he would use that height. He would loom over senators. Like, he would corner you if he wanted something from you and just, like, hang over you with all his height
it's
and
scary.
Back you into a
and
corner.
When you got a guy who's that big, who's good at using his body, and he's that smart,
and
the biggest, smartest guy in the room, and a giant dong.
He can, like, slap people
dick
with.
Dick sounds too small. You got to say dong.
Jumbo.
Or wang.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a word in Dutch, swaffela, which means to hit something with your penis. This is actually true. It was the word of the year in Holland in 2008.
All of a sudden, Dan just faints.
Yeah, I freaked out because that's such a great factoid, but I would go home and have no idea how to Google that. Like, swaffela is not a thing
What I like to say is that Belgians are known for their waffles, and Dutch people are known for their swaffels, and that way you'll remember it.
Oh, Belgians are known for their waffles. And
Dutch people are known for the swaffels, yeah. So the point is that, you know, LBJ has this fifth appendage that he, you know, I mean, that's a real advantage.
I guess so, man. Gee whiz.
And also for psychological warfare, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You got Jumbo coming at you. How do you think straight?
Well, you're the president of the United States. You're taller than everybody, and you're smarter, and you got a bigger dick. You win. You win.
Absolutely.
You know what? You ready for this? LBJ kicks the shit out of all.
That's right.
That's great. I'm so happy you got off the Gerald Ford Express train. I'm really thrilled about that.
I know I chose the most, but I like that
pick. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's he can hang. He can hold himself.
Yes, he can. You're talking about he's probably at least he's proven himself to be the best athlete among any president, and there's no question about that. High level football player. So.
Yeah.
You guys don't know anything
but
about
LBJ
what's like on
fields. I mean, that's the thing, because so much of what we're dealing is, right, there's like the Batman effect, right? Who's the craziest?
Right.
And, I mean, secretly, I think LBJ may be one of our craziest presidents.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Especially when you hear those stories about him, like, just in the middle of a public gathering, turning around, unzipping his fly, and peeing on the leg of a Secret Service agent. That guy is psycho. That guy in a ring will do anything.
No doubt. Who's the biggest pussy besides... it's got to be either Gerald Ford... I mean, it's got to be either Jimmy Carter or Barack Obama to me.
I think you got to dip back into, like, the pre-Civil War presidents, too.
Yeah,
because those guys lived hard. They had to use
Millard
their hands.
Millard Fillmore, Brian...
Millard, goddamn Fillmore.
But, so what's your pick for...
Well, I'm trying to skirt the Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama issue. You'll notice that there are no living presidents in the book because and this is true, got in trouble researching and writing this book with the Secret Service.
Did you?
Because of the things that come up when you Google Barack Obama weaknesses in fight, the flags that are drawn.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on. We have to talk about this because we live in America. Mm-hmm. That's not supposed to happen.
It was research, and I also published an article on crack.com, the website, that was loosely tied into my research, and it involved... it has since been taken down, obviously, and I don't want to say exactly what the article was, but any one of your listeners who's familiar with my work, it's the only one that doesn't exist anymore that
it's
could be considered...
It's a free country. Why can't you say shit about the president? No, this is not acceptable.
We that live was in a great answer, Dan.
If you're an American, you're allowed to say that the president's a pussy and I could kick his ass. Aren't you allowed
sure,
to say
but
that?
To strategically say, and this is how you kick his ass?
It was framed as a guide to do things against the president that could be considered lightheartedly treasonous.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So giving people ideas of how to beat the shit out of a president.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way that I thought was satirical and, like, there was no useful advice in the article whatsoever. And the Secret Service contacted us and they said, you need to take that article down. We're going to subpoena all of your commenters because we need to, anyone who said, like, in the comments, I agree, or this is how I do it. We want to talk to them. And we're like,
oh my God.
You're going to meet a lot of 14-year-old boys in your
They've
research.
Always done that, haven't they?
I think so, yeah.
That's their job to look at, you know, threats to the president. That's legit.
It is. And the guy who I spoke to, I just broke your table, I'm sorry. The guy who I spoke to on the phone was super normal. He was like, look, I got a sense of humor. I know what you're doing. It's fine. It's just my job to check up on these things.
Yeah. Right.
You got to go down to the downtown office in L.A. and meet with some guys. And so I did. And they were completely humorless and had, like, my articles printed out and things circled on
them.
That's
amazing.
And it was really tough because they would pick out a line that I had written to be funny and say, you wrote this. Why did you do that?
And I would have been like, because I'm a comedian and an American, you piece of shit. When have you written a book, you fucking donut?
Okay,
I
auditioned that line in my head, and then I answered, I'm really sorry, and then I had to explain, like, line by line how comedy works in a very, like, kill the frog sort of way, where they're like, why did you use this word instead of that word? And I'm like, well, because Dick Tornado is funnier than Penis Whirlwind. I'm sorry. Any comedian will tell you that.
that's amazing. I wish I'd been there.
That's amazing.
I would have been like, guys, this is what you have to do. He fucking works at crack.com. He's not going to fucking kill the president.
Brian, you can be there. All you just have to do is publish, like, another article about how you would... I'm not even going to say it on air because now I'm paranoid.
You know what it is? Like, in any group, and they would agree with me, in any group of guys who are, you know, enforcers, if you got in law enforcement, whatever, you're always going to have cowboys. You're always going to have younger dudes. You're going to have dudes who aren't that smart. You're going to have dudes who are just really gung-ho. Or sometimes you have guys who just want to fuck with you. They might have just wanted to mess with you.
Yeah,
they might have, you know, sometimes it's fun to be like, guys, act serious. We're going to fuck with this dude. And that's fine, too. You know?
Yeah, but also think about their worst-case scenario. I mean, it's incredibly unlikely, but, you know, you have someone who kills Barack Obama and, like, in his apartment, they find Dan's crack.com article.
It is. A lot of times it is some dude, you know, who's from Jersey. Look at him. Look at him. Do you even work for crack.com? He didn't even write this book. Dan,
no, right.
Dan O'Brien's actually dead in the trunk of his car. He's just obsessed with Dan O'Brien.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as being a total pansy, Carter. Barack?
Would probably agree.
A good man. He's a good man.
What about James Buchanan, though?
James Buchanan was such a pussy. I really...
Yeah.
I would like to fight him just for, like, well, this will be a good warm-up for a real president.
Yeah. Really? Why was he such a pussy?
Just some people are born that way. I mean...
By the way, this would actually... I mean, speaking of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, I would love this as a video game. Like, this would be so much fun.
Yeah.
And you, like, get
but
to...
But only, like, intellectual nerds like yourself...
No, come on. If you had, like... Imagine you had a phone on... An app on your iPhone, right? And you, like, got to pick whichever president you would fight as. And then you had to do it Mike Tyson's
Punch-Out. The manual's right in front of us, how to fight a president.
That's right.
This is a really great idea that I have patented.
Now, when is this... who's publishing this thing? When is it available?
Available March 18th, anywhere books are sold.
Seriously, guys, I swear to God, it's hilarious.
Yeah, and you can pre-order it on Amazon, right?
You can. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million.
Go to the Brian Callen. Go to BrianCallen.com and click the Amazon banner.
Because we get pennies.
Oh, you got that? Yeah. No, I know that.
I think I've seen $100. Yeah. I can't remember. But anyway, we never push it. I'm so hopeless with this stuff. The worst.
But Brian, sell yourself.
I'm selling myself.
Spread your legs, Brian.
I'm writing a book right now called The Manual, you guys. And Hunter's helping me, and
what's it about? Is it manual underlined?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be good. It's about it's basically an open letter to my son and my daughter about how to be a man and what to look for in a man and you know, what to do, like how to fight three guys in an alleyway, how to survive in jail. I don't know any of this, but I have my points of view.
And you may find that large portions of How to Fight Presidents are excerpted.
Yeah. That's fine. Well, I do have a reading list. We're coming out with a reading list. You know, there are certain things that you want to know. Like as a young man, I wanted to know certain things, man. There are certain things I wish I'd known. There are certain things that I wasn't taught. Not my parents' fault. They did an amazing job.
Right.
But there are just certain things that, you know, I guess you want to kind of a lot of it's just like, just take it easy and be patient and just show up every day.
Yeah.
Huge part of it is showing up every day.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a sport you want to do or anything, like stand-up, just takes a long time. No big deal. But just keep showing up, even if it's a little bit. You know, and it's just a war of attrition. Life is attrition, and it's slow erosion. I don't think, you know, in the movies things happen, bang, and all of a sudden you're a changed man or woman. But for the most part, shit happens. Yeah.
Well, it's like it takes 10 years to be an overnight success, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or 20.
Well, actually,
or
that 20. One of my
in my case 25. Nothing's happened yet.
One of my coworkers at Cracked has written about this. The Karate Kid effect, the montage effect, which he thinks is like a movie thing that has been one of the most damaging things to happen to like our idea of hard work, because we're grown up on these movies like Rocky and Karate Kid where things are bad and then there's a 30-second montage and then suddenly, okay, now I know karate. And that sort of ingrained in kids this idea that like all I need to do is really believe in myself and play some rockin' 80s music and then I'll come out the other side a real expert. And it sort of glosses over that whole 10,000 hours, the Malcolm Gladwell idea, and how much work actually goes into being good at literally anything.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I'm writing this script about a guy who's a second grade teacher, and he's a total big kid, and he'd never had to grow up, and then he loses the girl of his dreams to this real man, and he says, I got to be a man to get her back. I got to become a real man. And there's this security guard thing. It turns out to be a SEAL Team 6 guy, and an ex-guy, and so he gets him to help him. He's his Yoda. The problem I'm running into is that, you're right, there are montages in the movie. You're not going to learn how to fight in 3-4 months
right.
or 5 months. It's not going to happen. It just takes so long to understand how to wrestle and box. And by the way, to be a man in the archetypal sense, you kind of have to come up hard, and they're just different things.
Yeah.
Like my joke always is I wanted to be a badass, but my parents loved me way too much. You know, I didn't have enough trauma. I didn't have enough worry. I never had to really defend for myself. You
that's,
know?
That's a heartbreak, man. I'm sorry about that.
It's tough for me. It's tough for me, dude. It's tough for me. To be worry-free my whole childhood sucked. I just always wanted to be kind of hard off the street, but I played tennis as a kid. Anyway.
But you played tennis with grit.
Yeah. I know I didn't. I used to actually freak out. I used to flip out when I was losing and throw my racket and quit. Anyway.
And that's how you became the...
I was a good wrestler. I was a tough wrestler.
There you go. Good.
That was all insecurity, though. I just didn't want to lose. And I wasn't a good wrestler because I got friends who were real D1 wrestlers. I was a high school wrestler, so let's everybody calm down. I'm an okay athlete. Hey, Brian. Medium white guy, 5'11", 170, with a long torso and short legs. You mean you weren't a great athlete?
You would be the same height as Grover Cleveland and Woodrow Wilson.
No, Wilson was a pile of death.
Yeah.
A leaking sack of death.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Who was the sickliest president?
Wilson. It was absolutely Wilson. Yeah, like towards the end there, he was just spit and glue keeping them together at that point.
Well, but JFK was pretty sick.
He was pretty sick, yeah. He would
his back.
He's got this like whole robust image, and everyone's like, oh, that youthful kid president, that young King Arthur kind of thing. He would smile and take pictures, go behind a corner and get in a wheelchair, and they would just wheel him onto his plane or wherever he needed to be.
Yeah, because he had a back brace.
Terrible back brace, yeah. Terrible back problems
his
whole life.
What was his
back
issue?
I don't know exactly what it was. It plagued him his entire life. Like, since he was a kid, he spent so much time in bed just reading because he couldn't get out of bed and he couldn't move.
Yeah.
Which was not his father's favorite thing, because his father had these very strict, like, to be a Kennedy man list of rules. And it was all about, you know, second place doesn't matter. We all need to be the captain of every... football team.
For example, and that's how Kennedy's dad became the greatest booze runner in America.
Joe Kennedy, that's right.
He was, you know, the Walter White of the Prohibition, you know.
Correct.
Right. And Kennedy was his sickly Walt Jr. just walking around on crutches.
That's right.
Thanks, God. Thanks, Breaking Bad. Yeah.
No,
who is the most robust?
Healthiest. Just healthiest?
Yeah. I mean, who lived the longest?
Who lived? Oh,
Reagan, probably.
I was supposed
Reagan
to know this.
Been.
Reagan lived for a pretty long time. Did
he had Alzheimer's?
Adams lived the longest? That can't be true. He lived for a long time.
Googling.
Yeah.
Googling.
No, there's no one's Googling. This is, I'm thinking.
But I think we agree that George Washington.
Gerald Ford and Gerald Ronald Ford. Reagan both lived to 93.
That's
But again,
impressive.
Like history.
By the way, yeah, but, thank you, America. But, no, yeah. But, and thank you, Dan O'Brien, for because now I'm going back to Gerald
no,
Ford.
No, but Brian, you, listen, the historical comparisons you have to take into account, like Gerald Ford living to 93. Yeah, sure, lots of people lived to 93. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, look at yeah. the five longest-living presidents.
Dude,
Ford,
giving you,
Reagan,
I don't
Adams.
See a weakness.
John Adams lived to 90 as, you know, in
well,
the
set. I love your chapter on Adams because Adams is an underrated president. John yeah. Adams was a badass. He was a brilliant man.
Yeah, I love him so much. He lacked the charm and social grace that I think is necessary.
He was just deeply principled.
Be, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he was
yeah,
a big, well, he was a big brain. He's not beating anybody in a
no,
fight.
No, but he was also, I mean, he deeply principled, sure, but he also was kind of on the spectrum. Like, he was a little aspie and autistic. Like, I love the story about, you know, Ben Franklin is sent over to France to try and get French support for the American
and
Revolution.
Very charming guy.
Amazingly charming. He's, like, seducing women. Yeah. He's doing all of this sort of stuff. And then Adams just blusters in there, you know, with, like, no mm-hmm. sense of humor. And it's just like, we want this and we want it right yeah. now. And yeah. almost totally undid.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, he defended, like you said, he defended the soldiers that committed the Boston Massacre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Boston at a time when it was actually physically dangerous to
right,
do
that's,
so.
Right, that's insane. That's you. Anyone can get killed doing that job.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a job where
and
very
he,
likely.
And he succeeded in getting them acquitted, right?
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, you know, he succeeded in getting them acquitted in a British court. I mean, you know, it's an impressive feat.
Yeah.
And should the guys have gone to jail or been executed? Probably not. So, like, yeah. justice prevailed. But at the same time, I think that's the thing is, you know, Adams is the most humorless president.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to win any friends in anywhere.
He'd,
no.
He'd,
because
he'd,
he wasn't interested in that. He just wanted
if
to...
If you beat him up, he'd either write a scathing article or sue you and win.
Yeah. yeah.
So
he was
he'd win our, the, he'd lose the battle, win the war.
That's right.
Yeah.
But so forget him. But I got to go back to Ford now. I don't see any weaknesses.
But it's actually,
Dan,
it's,
you keep rolling your eyes at me.
Down.
I don't
he
see any
fell
weaknesses.
Down,
it's
Brian.
Actually
he couldn't stand up
he was,
straight.
He was a great athlete, dude.
Yes, but he had difficulty staying on his
He's
legs.
He's cornering the ring yeah. off, bro. He's boxing your fucking face off.
But you've got boxing experience. You would say.
Well, let's not. How, I don't know about that. I'm an actor who wants so badly to be tough, and
sure.
so I practice. Hitting mitts. So
sure.
no, I don't. But keep going.
In your experience, would you say that the best boxers are the ones who fall down a lot? Is that
Dan, that is a myth that was used by the media. So he didn't
really?
Fall down
Again,
a lot.
Internet.
He was an excellent athlete, and I mean, you're talking about a linebacker in the NFL. He didn't play, but he could have. He was recruited by all accounts. Said that you know they wanted him. I just don't see any weaknesses.
How many people
man.
Did okay. he murder with his bare hands?
Watch this. Oh.
This is a good question, Dan. You have a point. I have to
oh,
say.
Oh, Gerald Ford. Let's just have a little action replay on that. Gerald Ford, oh, falling
he fell,
down.
He was helping a woman down and looking off, and
uh-huh.
and it was raining. It was raining, dude. It was raining. It was raining. Oh, let me see how he recovers. Ah, he recovers no problem. Well, right there.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Right there shaking
no,
hands.
Yeah.
No, look at that. He's a man. Hold on. Let me see him recover.
Brian, can we see that freeze frame?
He's YouTubing.
He's ass down
he's
on
YouTubing,
the ground.
He's YouTubing Gerald Ford trips and falls.
Here, listen.
Hold on, you son of a bitch. First of all, you're being treasonous right now for even like seeing this. Hold on. But watch the recovery. No problem. Everybody falls, and he's back up. And he's back up and shaking hands.
Now
not
he's
even,
back up.
Not even missing a beat. And the other guy's got a coat on. Ford doesn't have a coat on. He's just in a suit. Look at that. Didn't miss a damn.
Oh,
hold on.
Here's another one. He's just walking upstairs, and
all
then
right,
he loses
he
his life. So he's has a
he
reputation
can't,
for falling.
He can't walk. If the fight happened on stairs, he's fucked. But if it's in a ring, he's fine. That's the point. Dan.
Yes.
Admit that Gerald Ford is the greatest.
No.
understand.
We just watched a video of him losing several battles with stairs.
He recovered immediately. He recovered immediately. This is bullshit, man. God, I do think you have a point, though, where a man, if you got Jackson who took lives, and many of them.
Yeah.
That's a formidable adversary. So it's either Ford just on sheer athleticism or Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Your case for Ford is so weak,
but then,
Brian.
Then you got Lincoln, too. So yeah. I got Lincoln, Jackson, Ford in my... by the way, I like Ronald Reagan. I like him, but...
Not as a fighter.
Yeah. As a lifesaver,
that seems super hard for you to admit.
If Gerald Ford is walking near a pool and falls into it, and then someone needs to swim in and save him, Ronald Reagan, for sure.
Gerald, yes, that's true. That's true. No, I can't put Reagan in the mix. He's too modern. He's just. He lives in an automated time. Ford played.
And fell down without being his opponent was stairs.
It's
Brian,
it's a tough one. I don't know.
Brian.
I don't know. I gotta go. God, I'm all bunched up right now. This is why it's the greatest book of all time. It raises the unanswerable questions, but the questions must be answered. Nixon isn't even in the area code, but
he
I
is,
like that Teddy's 5'10".
Nixon is
by
dirty,
the way.
Though.
Teddy 5'10", he's got no neck. There's not a lot of vulnerable spots. He's got a very strong, thick mustache, yeah, which is going to brush against your skin and cause major rug burn. And he knew how to fight. Teddy trained as a fighter.
Yep.
And a boxer and a wrestler and a jiu-jitsu guy in earnest. I don't know what his training was like. I don't know who his tutors were.
He studied with the guy who invented judo. The guy who invented judo came to the Oval Office. And
really?
Yeah.
So he's got good trips?
Yeah.
And he's got, and by the way, back then, judo dealt with double legs and single legs.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know, man. But you're still dealing with Gerald Ford, who was an NFL athlete. He was an NFL athlete and much bigger and stronger.
And do you
shit, I'm all bunched up right now.
Do you implicitly believe that every NFL athlete is the strongest and fastest and best
fighter? To make it to the NFL, you have to be a freak.
Mm-hmm.
You really do. You have to be so tough, so fast, so strong. It doesn't mean you can beat people in a fight. There are a lot of guys in the UFC who crush everybody. My buddy Brendan Schaub, who did play pro football, but he'll beat up anybody in the NFL in less than a minute because he's just so skilled. But you know, so it depends on your training, but we have to kind of take training in some ways out of this.
Yeah,
we're talking about just men, mano a mano, in a ring, swinging and fighting, and when you have that, you got to give the advantage. There are two things you give an advantage. One is grit. One is a guy who's going to kill you, but the other is just sheer power and athleticism.
Yeah,
and Brian, let me ask you this. Okay, you put a boxer, right, a classically trained boxer, in the ring with the toughest MMA fighter in the world.
The boxer dies quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. And the point is that Andrew Jackson grew up in a time before they had rules to take away.
You're right.
You know, I mean, this guy is not holding out on crotch shots biting.
Oh, no. He's eye gouges. Oh, you're losing an eye.
Yeah, exactly.
And an ear.
That's right. So the point is that the presidents who come from a time before there was a well-structured game like football grew up as MMA fighters. Like Lincoln was an MMA fighter.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel like Jackson would look at football and be like, oh, you have to wait your turn?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when football players, they always say that, I can't remember who said it, but when football players run on the field going, this is war. You know, the guy said, well, no soldiers ever run into a battlefield going, this is football. You know, there is a fundamental difference. Yeah. So all right. What are you saying, Hunter?
If you're talking about a raw, no holds barred fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I think in terms of presidents of the last 50 years, LBJ, no doubt. Right. For the last 50 years. But if you're talking about all time. I mean, I think, the psycho factor is so important. And
it is. All right, here's another question. You put him out in the woods with a knife and a match.
Oh, Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson.
Without a
Jesus.
Doubt.
He would, by the way, throw the match out. It's excessive. Doesn't need it.
Just rub two steaks together, yeah. Right? Yeah, you got to go with, you got to go with
Woods,
Jackson.
Woods survival man. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, you know, Teddy
well,
Roosevelt.
Too, maybe.
Teddy Roosevelt, like, was a woodsman.
Yeah, not really.
But, you
grew
know, he was an aristocrat who moved into the woods. Andrew Jackson was born of the woods.
Yeah.
Dan's built a little bit like Teddy.
Slow Thank
shoulders,
you.
Got some big. Were you an athlete?
No, I played football last night.
You didn't do any sports in high school?
No. Yeah,
more of an intellectual, more of a writer, a poet.
Sure, that's actually more masculine than the truth. So I'll say I was an intellectual. I did theater in high school.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And which is now why you know why he likes Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Because he too was an actor.
He was an actor.
This is, by the way, career-ruining moment that I did theater. Now take my advice on how to fight people.
Yeah, by the way, on how to fight presidents, I want you to read the book and then call me.
Okay, Brian, what's your
pick?
And
I'll put it in the context.
What's your pick? And just so that your ego isn't wrapped up in this, we'll pretend you never suggested Gerald Ford.
Fight-wise, I got to go with Jackson.
Andrew Jackson, yeah.
But I mean, Lincoln's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, I would say if I could see any fight, it would be Jackson versus Lincoln.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Like, that would be an amazing fight.
I feel like Jackson will want it more.
You think so?
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think that's what it'll come down to, because they're both pretty crazy. They're both wiry and sinewy and like sort of life hardened in a way that people aren't
that's
anymore.
True.
So it's just got to, for me, come down to
first of all,
which one will not
we know
quit.
You're going to have to kill Jackson.
Yeah.
You're going to have to kill him.
Right. He's not going to quit. He's not going to back down.
No.
Lincoln might. He's got that depression.
Well, you don't think that it's possible that you know there's a point that you cross with Lincoln and he just loses it?
That's true. That might be. But
I think so.
Yeah.
But he was depressive, so he might go into himself.
Yeah.
And then just kind of be like, well, in the grand scheme of things, Andrew
Jackson
should win because he's got more tenacity. Yeah. For my country, I'll die.
Now, what about some of the other, like, badass, tough presidents? Like, because we haven't talked about, like, old Tippecanoe or some of the other. Because there were some, that whole generation of, I mean, I think regardless, it's going to be that series of log cabin presidents, you know, really between Jackson and, you know, Ulysses S. Grant is maybe the last one. But that era of presidents, I mean, some of those guys were just...
Yeah, I mean, even one before Jack, Quincy Adams, I think, is a real dark horse contender, because he was a guy who grew up in the shadow of his father, who was so demanding and so, look, I'm the president, so top that.
Yeah.
That was him throwing a smoke bomb.
Because they didn't
ninja?
Have microphones
yeah,
back there.
Ninja? Yeah.
And so John Quincy Adams grew up with this very impressive and very cold father that he was always trying to impress.
And his father trained him for the next Revolutionary War.
Absolutely, yeah. And his father was off doing fancy diplomat stuff during the Revolutionary War, so John Quincy was at home at 8 years old as like, well, I'm the man of the house now, and he can see the Revolutionary War happening from his porch.
Yeah.
And he just grew up with that, writing in his journal, today could have been the day that I died. The soldiers could have come and just taken me, but they didn't.
Yeah.
But like, I'm prepared with that.
Yeah, he's emotionally ready.
And he exercised too. He was a guy who was swimming 50 miles a day, even as president, even at like 50 years old, he was doing
that. Not 50, but 5 miles a day. Nobody swims 50 miles a day.
Check the book.
Dan, I'm looking good. I read the chapter and I know what you're talking about. And again,
it's probably not 50 miles a day.
This is the greatest book ever written, but you're a liar.
Yeah. Well, it should be called Lies and More Lies, but here's the thing. It is the greatest book ever written. We got to wrap this up. The man is Dan O'Brien. He's basically head writer and creative director for video for crack.com, and he has extensive experience in video because he was in theater. He has no business writing a book like this, but he did, and it's outstanding, and I recommend it. We'll put it on the website. Dan O'Brien, come back anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You're a good man and a funny man.
And the book is?
And the book is How to Fight Presidents, Defending Yourself Against the Badasses Who Ran This Country. It's a blast to read. And at the end of the day, just remember that I won this debate.
With your Gerald Ford argument.
Oh, yeah. And I'll be, where am I going to be? I'm going to be in Bloomington, Minnesota, March 6th, 7th, 8th, doing stand-up.
Portland?
I'm in Portland, Oregon. That's right. Can't wait. At Helium, March 15th and 16th. So come on down.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.